The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's just hard.
A retired pastoral associate at St. Peter Catholic Church, Pratt's, and the priest she worked closely with, retired Father Otis Young, were reported missing at 10 Sunday night, according to the Covington Police Department.
He couldn't believe it. And they said she burned. I could not believe it.
The next day, two bodies burned beyond recognition were found behind a business in downtown Covington. Tuesday afternoon, coroner Dr. Charles Preston confirmed Father Otis Young was one of them. He died of blunt and sharp trauma. The coroner will conduct a DNA test to positively identify the second victim.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, what a horrible way to die, huh? Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Hey, thanks for joining me today. That's disturbing news out of Louisiana. Earlier this week, a priest and an employee of a Catholic church, in the town of Covington, they went missing. And as you just heard, two badly burned bodies were found about a half a mile away from the church. Father Otis Young recently retired. You know, he'd served the church all those years. He was a pastor at St. Peter's Parish. And then Ruth Pratts is her last name. She was a staff member. She went missing earlier in the week, and the police have positively identified one of the bodies belonging to the Father Young. Ruth Pratts is still officially listed as missing, but police say that the priest died of sharp and blunt force trauma. So I don't know any more details than that. I've been reporting a lot on attacks against the Catholic Church. I just hope that it doesn't ratchet up to where priests are now going to be targeted as well. Archbishop Gregory Amen of New Orleans, of course, is deeply disturbed by this. He's asking for your prayers. So I'll just present that to you. Remember the soul of Father Otis in our chaplet in about an hour from now. So I hope you'll join me for that. As evidence of the continuing secularization of the West is taking place, I saw a story. It gave me a little bit of pause. So I'm going to throw this at you, and just so it's on your radar. England and Wales. They just completed their every 10-year census, and the results show, I think, a very disturbing trend. They found a decrease in the number of people who call themselves Christian. When we lose Christianity, right, when we have a decrease in followers of Christ, that's got to be filled with something else. And what they're finding is there's been an increase in shamanism and in other religions as well. Thank you, Maggie. Maggie was just talking to me in my other ear. A little background behind how it works in the studio here. Maggie's on the other side of the glass. She can talk in my headsets while somebody else is still talking to me, maybe while you're talking to me. But I also have another screen here called the Stack, which our phone calls come in, and she just sent me a message through that. So a lot goes on behind the scenes. You ever get in here, you can see how we all multitask. There is not just England's Wales. The first time since evangelization of the British Isles that the numbers are indicating that half of the population say they're followers of Christ. So our numbers are decreasing there. Correspondingly, there was almost an identical increase in the number of people who say they don't believe anything. And that, to me, is a problem, right? That's the worst of all. It's not just that, though. 74,000 people. When you don't believe in anything, you'll believe in everything. 74,000 people say they're pagans. 26,000 say that they follow something called a Levi. 25,000 say they're Jains, spelled J-A-I-N-S, which is a religion from India. 13,000 claim to be Wiccans, right? All the witchcraft, followers of nature. We need to pray, and we need the new evangelization more than ever, don't we? I mean, when you see these signs, that is problematic. I just wonder, when I report on this news sometimes, and there's so much sometimes negativity out there, I try to give you hope, and I'm so grateful to pray the chaplet with you and talk about the importance of our faith and the impact it makes. When you reject God, this is what happens. I wonder how long God's justice, God's a God of mercy, but he is equally a God of justice. How long he can permit this type of rejection, this idol worship, these false idols that people are now bowing down before. How many commandments can be broken? The commandments of adultery, coveting your neighbor's wife, murder, right? I mean, think about these things. Not keeping holy the Sabbath, taking the Lord's name in vain. I mean, to go through the commandments and take a look at society at large. And I just wonder, man, how long can this go on? I'm grateful for Relevant. I'm grateful for you. I only deliver this news to call you to greater prayer and to sacrifice. You know, the Fatima Seers, they did harsh, harsh penances. They lived in a time where World War I was raging, World War II was looming, where they dealt with plague. And it was prayer and sacrifice that changed things. Prayer of the rosary, right? Prayer of the chaplet here. These things change things. And I believe you and I are called to live in this particular time. As dark as it can be, I do believe, you know, that we can make a difference. And we're called to make a difference. That's why we've been chosen to live at this particular moment. So we can't give up hope. We've got to have hope, especially in the mercy of God. And I think there's still time. I think we are in this period in which the Lord told St. Faustina, before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful Savior. But woe to those of you who do not recognize this time of my visitation. I really do believe we are in that time of his visitation. You know, on the political front here, on another note, Governor DeSantis, I don't know how you feel about him. We know Donald Trump announced he's going to be running for president. The U.S. Florida governor is apparently coming out with an autobiography. It'll be out in a couple months. I think February is when they're expecting it. Something that a lot of presidential hopefuls actually do before they announce they're running, right? They're going to run for the highest office in the land. It's entitled Courage to be Free, Florida's Blueprint for America's Revival. If that does not sound like a red carpet rollout for a presidential run, I don't know what is. The book strongly hints that DeSantis plans to use what he's done in Florida in his first term in office for the rest of the country. Maggie, do we have the audio of DeSantis? Can I run? No. Okay, we'll pass on that. We got an issue with some of our audio. I'll share with you a little bit more on that coming up later. But what will happen is he'll ultimately detail his journey from Sunshine State baseball diamonds as a kid to Yale, Harvard Law, service in the U.S. Navy 3 times in the U.S. House of Representatives to his current role. And meanwhile, no one's quite sure what President Biden's going to do in 2024. We were told. I did a quick search earlier this morning. I saw a piece of audio where Joe Biden, I don't know where he was. He was talking at some union event or he was somewhere. And when it was over, people were shouting, 4 more years, 4 more years. And the president said something that has a lot of people talking today. He actually said, well, I don't know about that. Now, is that just a Joe Biden off the cuff comment? Because I did a quick search. Let me get over to it. When I heard him say that, I said, what's the news? Is he actually coming out and deciding not to run? Like, he's just turned 80, right? He'll be 84, 86 by the time his next term ends. You know, will he be capable of even running at that particular time? I'm not quite sure he will be. I don't know. Gosh, I certainly wouldn't want to. But here's some headlines I found. Check these out. These come just from, a couple of weeks ago in November. Biden to those who don't want him to run, watch me, right? Biden suggests Trump will not take power, especially if he runs. Biden says it's his intention to run in 2024. There's just a few of the headlines I did a quick search for that popped up, right? So to hear him say this today, it raises some questions. Will Joe Biden actually throw his hat in? He's been, he's 80 years old. He's told everybody he's going to run. Democrats are settling in on him as their nominee. There are incidents like what happened where he was giving that speech. And he says, he raises the question as whether or not he'll do it. He'll be 82 if he won again, 86 by the time he left office. I am not an ageist, and I have no problem with somebody who's sharp and competent and capable of running, but I do worry about somebody who is at that age with the demands, the unbelievable demands that the office of the president has, and whether or not he'll be capable of fulfilling them. Many people question that capability right now. A lot of other news here, too, and I'll be joined in just a moment by John Hinterlong. But one final story here. This comes out of the big tech sector, and we're talking about big numbers like Amazon. They're laying off 10,000 people. Did you hear that? I just saw a news report the other day that their Black Friday shopping or their Cyber Monday shopping, they did the best ever. Yet they're laying 10,000 people off. And It may be the fact that, you know, it's the economy. It's spreading to other areas. Wall Street Journal, I saw a piece. They were reporting earlier today that CNN announced they're going to be laying employees off. And, you know, I don't know, numbers have been reported yet, so I don't know what's happening. But it comes after previous rounds of layoffs in the past. CNN is a property owned by Warner Brothers Discovery, which happened because of a merger of AT&T's, you know, Warner and the Discovery Channel. But they also own HBO and TNT and the Food Network. Apparently, advertising has slowed down, probably because of a slowdown in purchasing because of inflation. But they're also dealing with a high amount of debt after that particular deal. So who they're laying off, I'm not quite sure. There is some talk, though, that they're going to rebrand, right? That they're going to change, that they have gone too far in one direction in their newscasts, and they need to get more central. Right? They need to be more fair, maybe more balanced. And if that happens, I think that would be fantastic, don't you? I think that would be phenomenal, in fact. So, you know, I said the same thing earlier today. It would be great if we saw the same thing in the Democratic Party. I'd like to see some pro-lifers in that party, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that serve the party better than being a party of death? I don't know whether we'll see that. And I'm not quite sure whether or not CNN will change its stripes right now. What they currently have on, to be honest with you, is pretty darn liberal. But speaking of life, early last month, the national, I guess it was NPR, they did something, and I won't play it. This is extremely disturbing. There was a lot of talk about it last month. You probably remember it. NPR did something that was, I think it was unpardonable in human terms. They broadcast the sound of an actual abortion. And what that did to women who've had an abortion, you know, those who've been traumatized by that loss or still trying to heal, I just don't understand how a nonprofit that relies on listener support could do something like that. But it was really reflective of what their agenda is all about and the ideology that they support. They played this on November 3rd, just a couple days before the election. I don't think it's coincidental because the Democrats ran on how critical supporting abortion was in this election, right? And how those midterms, it was absolutely paramount to them. So all of a sudden, NPR runs the sound of a woman having an abortion, right? The audio was taken from an abortion clinic in the Detroit area. It was meant to influence Michigan voters. They were voting on a proposal there called Proposal 3. And the proposal was passed by a very significant majority. It made abortion part of the state's constitution, right? It's now part of their constitution. Shame on Michigan. How horrible, right? So the folks at NPR, this was simply, we're just airing the medical procedure. That's not a big deal, right? We want to show everybody, you know, it's fine. It certainly was a medical procedure, but it was one that ended with a deliberate murder, the deliberate killing of a defenseless unborn child. And that they felt free to broadcast that? Again, it goes back, for me, it's really just a sign of how far our society has descended. I was shocked by the midterms. I was shocked that this issue resonated so powerfully with voters. But apparently, you know, I read the winds wrong. I really did. Abortion must be, you know, that critical to people that they were okay with this and they were okay continuing to suffer economically in an effort to have the right to continue to destroy human life. I won't get it. I have a problem processing. If I'm missing something, feel free to tell me. John Hinterlong, he chairs the Right to Life League in California. He's also connected to Hollywood, including being a producer of the film Unplanned about Abby Johnson's conversion. If you've not seen that, you really should. I've invited him to stop by today to talk to us a little bit. This December 3rd, there will be a day of reparation for that baby that was aborted. They're calling her Baby Amanda Marie. Baby Amanda Marie. And he's here to fill everyone in on what's going to happen. Hey, John, thanks for what you do behind the scenes using your talents in the film industry. And thanks for being with me today.
It's my pleasure, Drew. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Fill us in on what's going on here. I mean, I first of all, I thought it was disgraceful, disgusting, and inappropriate that NPR would go ahead and air that abortion live. But apparently they did. Apparently it had an impact, especially in Michigan. You're planning a day of reparation for this. What's the purpose of it? And tell us a little bit about what's going to unfold.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just horrific, like you mentioned, that the total disregard for human life to the extent that they would even consider actually, you know, it just shows they have no regard that that's a human person that has every bit of the right to life as any other human person does. And it was also, like you said, no mistake that they did it right at the time of the election. Yeah. When they really wanted to publicize and really sympathize and give an angle on the whole situation that somehow, you know, made this type of procedure somehow acceptable to people by actually putting it, you know, live on the radio. So, yeah, and so
let's talk about that for just a quick second here. I mean, what did we learn about abortion from that? What were they trying to show? Were they trying to show that, hey, it's a simple, painless, wonderful procedure? What was the big takeaway from those who actually heard that?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, they tried to turn the woman with an unplanned pregnancy into a type of martyr who is suffering to such an extent that she has to go through a traumatic event, but one that is, in their minds, you know, a type of health care for her, right?
Yeah.
And they certainly give it their typical NPR leftist slant. And, you know, their claim, basically the woman who was instrumental in actually, I guess you could say, being the reporter, you know, paints the picture of, gosh, she's going through a really traumatic thing and it's a difficult situation for her. Let's support her in every way we can and make sure that she doesn't have to suffer any more than she already is, yeah, as if somehow it's unavoidable or something, you know,
yeah,
which we all know is just ridiculous.
You know, it sounded like it was very comforting, easygoing. That's not the way it really goes. There were some headlines I saw after it was over that said the woman was forced to stay there. Were they accurate? What happened there?
You know, I'm not sure of those exact details. I don't know that there's any official release, and I'm not privy to any of the private information that took place. Right. I know that, you know, there was obvious,
right,
Emotional response from the woman who was crying and who was, you know, just like you said, you won't play it, you won't listen to it. I won't listen to it either.
Yeah, it's hard.
I mean, there's some things that, you know, you know, like you mentioned, I was involved in making the movie Unplanned. We actually showed the process take place right on film, and it was a very, very difficult decision for us to decide whether or not we should be that graphic. And, you know, when I say we showed it, we showed, we CGI'd, you know, the event. Obviously, we wouldn't do that in reality. However, just as a side note, an interesting side note, the one of the actors in the movie who played Abby's lawyer, when we did show pictures of a real live ultrasound, and it was him and his wife's child. So we credited that baby with being the youngest ever actor credited in a movie.
That's so cool. You made history. I love that. Hey, we only have a few minutes. Fill everyone in what's going on. How can we participate December 3rd in this day of reparation? I think it's important to make reparation, to sacrifice, to atone for this horrible loss of life. I know you've dubbed the baby Amanda Marie, to be precise, but fill us in on what's happening and how people can participate.
Well, yeah, this is exactly as you said. You know, it's a day of recollection. We're going to focus on prayer, fasting, and, you know, we're encouraging parishes to get people together and, you know, set up prayer services and maybe pray in the rosary or whatever it is. You know, we don't have a particular set of prayers, right, but all prayers God hears. We know this.
Amen.
And fasting, of course, you know, is something that we all know is a powerful action when we have a specific intention, right, especially. And then, like I said, together, too, the power of togetherness in prayer, joined together, is also very powerful. Yeah, so that's what we want to do. And we not only, you know, of course, for this instance, especially Amanda Marie, and especially for this horrific procedure that took place live on the air, but we also have to remember that that day, right, as in every day, yep, there are thousands of innocent, defenseless brothers and sisters in the womb whose lives are being ended. And I mean thousands. I'm not exaggerating. This is, you know, the fact, yeah, of the matter. And so we want to include them in our prayers, too, as well as for God to give us strength and clarity
you know,
of mind to end abortion completely.
You bring up a great point, John, though. When you say thousands die every day, I mean, I remember the loss of 9/11. We would commemorate that. We think about how many thousands of souls went down in those twin towers. That happens every day in the wombs of mothers across the country. That number and greater. So, you know, this is an ongoing thing. We need to do our part. As I said a little bit earlier, that prayer and reparation, I think, change things. And I hope everyone will join on December 3rd and make a difference. Join in with their prayers and with their sacrifices as well. Keep up your good work. Any new films coming?
Oh, there's always something. There's always something. Nothing that I can specifically say.
I love
it. Hey, everybody, go out. So you can see there's so much faith-based media going. It's really trending. You know, people are excited about it. Yeah, go out, support it.
Yeah.
Show what you believe in by your actions.
Yeah, I've got an idea. Everybody has an idea, of course, for a great program that would fill theaters. I'll have to tell you about it about one day. It would be faith-based, but I think it would resonate with a lot of people. Hey, I want to thank you for being here. John, thank you so much for being here. We'll catch up again soon. All right.
Keep up your good work also.
Thank you, sir. That's John Hinterlong. And stay with me when I come back. Divorce. Are you divorced? Are you going through divorce? Are you the victim of divorce? Divorce, a new study has found, makes kids more vulnerable to getting hurt online. I'll tell you what the latest research has just uncovered. That straight ahead. Stay with me.
How could anybody think that such a significant event has no effect on the kid at all? That's just ridiculous to think like that.
Even a move just from one house to another can have what is considered on the ACEs scale, adverse childhood experiences. Even just moving can be an adverse childhood experience, much less divorce of the parents.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be back here with you. That's Dr. Kimberly Beam Holmes. They're giving input on the effects of divorce on children, especially in a world where people are given all kinds of bad advice about getting divorces. It's good to be here. If you have gone through a divorce, if you are in the process of going through it, if you've got kids, you might want to turn up the radio. Maybe you've got some children who are doing this. There's an effort underway once again. This comes from elites in our society to try to make divorce seem like a good thing. Isn't it crazy how things are so reversed? I just got done talking about NPR, right? How they try to make that audio that they played of an abortion be a good thing. You know, anybody who can see, anybody who can hear objectively, no, it's not a good thing. It's not natural and it's wrong. The same thing with divorce. And I want to be careful about how I say this. I know a lot of people have gotten married maybe for the wrong reasons, and maybe your marriage wasn't valid, wasn't licit. But our culture today wants you to have this mindset. If it doesn't work out, throw it away. There was a recent National Review article. It cited a story from The Atlantic, and it was entitled, quote, "How I Demolished My Life, a Home Improvement Story," end of quote. Another one from the New York Times entitled, "Divorce Can Be an Act of Radical Self-Love." Let me repeat that. Divorce can be an act of radical self-love? Those are just two examples, two of a slew of articles trumpeting what's called, quote, good divorce. If you've been through divorce, you know it's not good, right? It's not a pleasant process. They say when a couple divorces, they lay down their cross, right? And it's the kids that pick it up. The idea, of course, is that divorce has no negative consequences on the married couple. You know, they're splitting. Kids are resilient. They're going to be fine. They're going to bounce back from whatever's thrown at them, including their parents splitting up. You know that's not the case. That's not the reality. There are huge numbers of studies that show the effects of divorce on kids and that those effects continue long into their adulthood. And kids of divorced parents are more likely to go to jail. They're more likely to do drugs, to get into sexual activity earlier in life, to engage in self-destructive behavior. They do poorly in school. You know, the list goes on. Now, a recent study shows another effect. They're more vulnerable to being manipulated online. That's why I'm talking to you about this today. I think it's critical that you pay attention to what is happening. The Institute of Family Studies recently published a study showing that kids of divorced parents spend a lot of time online. I mean, they spend, in fact, more than their counterparts from intact families. And what does that do? That leads to higher risk of depression and loneliness and sleep deprivation and other things. We'll post this story for you. I've invited Joey Pontarelli to join us today. He's been with us in the past. He authored a book called It's Not Your Fault, a practical guide to navigating the pain and problems of your parents' divorce. And you can find more at restoredministry.com. It's good to have Joey with us today. Joey, good afternoon.
Drew, great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I know this is right up your alley. I know you've been helping people recover from their parents' divorces. I hope your book is doing well. What do you make of this study? I found it striking. I should be an eye-opener for a lot of parents considering divorce, or at least they got to find ways to insulate their children if they're going to go down this path.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of a story. When I was younger, my parents separated and pursued a divorce when I was 11 years old. And at that time, my mom was really required to fill both roles, the mom and the dad role. And she just literally couldn't do that. And because of that, she couldn't be the mom that we needed her to be. She couldn't, you know, pay the bills, make the meals, and parent us in every way that we needed her. And so I remember I was hanging around with kids I shouldn't have been. One of my sports buddies, he introduced me to pornography. We were, you know, when I would go to sleepovers at his house, we'd be watching, R-rated movies. Wow. Down the street with another neighbor. We were playing, you know, Grand Theft Auto, which has nudity and, you know, pornographic hidden scenes in that game. Wow. And so in a very real way, not by my mom's choice, I would be the first one to defend her. She just had so much on her plate that she couldn't look out for me and my siblings in the way that I know she would want to. Because the divorce is so overwhelming. So this study doesn't surprise me at all. I was reading a few articles. It makes so much sense that these young people who come from broken families are spending more time online as well, which then makes them more vulnerable to, like you said, being manipulated. And I think the main reason they're spending so much time online is because they're so lonely, right? Yep. Loneliness is one of the main negative effects. You quoted a few different negative effects. Loneliness is one of the main ones. And what easier way is there to feel loneliness than picking up your phone?
So true. It is so true. So kids, I guess they have it because they're online in greater frequency than intact families. They're more vulnerable to be manipulated. Or is it the same for intact family kids as well? Is it just the number of people that are online? Or is it the fact that they've suffered this trauma of divorce, therefore they're easier prey?
Yeah, what I saw in the study was that they are spending more time online than their peers, like you said, from intact families, and therefore it makes them more likely to be manipulated. But in addition to just the time factor, there's the fact that they don't have usually as good of a relationship with their parents, and their parents aren't as involved in their lives. And so because of that, they might not be able to go to mom or dad and say, hey, this weird guy online is talking to me, or hey, I came on this website and someone asked to meet up with me. Some, you know, shady behavior that normally a young person might bring to mom or dad, but if mom and dad are so overwhelmed by their own trauma and dealing with their divorce, they might not have the capacity to help that young person.
Yeah. So what would you say to parents right now who are thinking about getting divorced? What advice would you give them? does it help things in the long run? I mean, maybe people feel, hey, we do have irreconcilable differences. There's no way this is going to work. And I'm out. And there's other people who might just, you know, who might need the counseling or the help to make it work. I don't know. Sometimes people throw the towel in too quickly and give up too easily. But what advice should you give to parents now?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. The first thing I would say is if you're in a situation of abuse or violence, get to safety. That's what the church says. Okay. Canon law says that. The catechism says it. There should be no doubt there. It really should go without saying. In that situation, then there needs to be a decision that's made. What next? Do you need to file for a legal separation because you need money to provide for your kids? The catechism says that's a legitimate reason to file for either a legal separation or a divorce. On the other hand, if you're in a situation where that's not true, maybe there is dysfunction at home, there's not, you know, there's violence or overt conflict that, you know, gets dramatic and perhaps even abusive at times, that's a different scenario. So I just want to differentiate between the two. In the first scenario, again, the hope, and this is what canon law says, is that we can heal the marriage and bring the family back together. And what I've seen, Drew, so often in our culture is that we're encouraging marriages, even in the Catholic world, that if they face struggles, to simply give up. Maybe you chose the wrong spouse or you picked the wrong vocation. Give up, get an annulment, go a different route. And I just want to speak totally against that and say, fight for your marriage. Do everything in your power, because in the long run, like you said, divorce is going to be much worse for your kids. And even for you, I would argue. And so even in those two cases, you know, if you're in danger, get to safety. If it's a low conflict situation, that could still be difficult, but certainly don't pursue a divorce. Go ahead and fight for your marriage. And I know this flies in the face of what the culture is saying, but this is what the research shows, that divorce is just traumatic and devastating for young people, for children.
Yeah, that's for sure. My guest today, and you can join us if you want. His name is Joey Puntarelli. I only have him for a few minutes. If you want to get in, the number's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls, your questions, and tap into his expertise. Paul's listening in Chicago. Joey, he's got a comment for you. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I'll try to be brief. One damage to children, in my experience personally and what I've seen, is relative to a bad marriage, whether they get divorced or not. I have 3 out of my 4 children, and I stayed in a marriage due to Catholic guilt. You heard about it. But the abuse is so bad, they're permanently damaged, 3 out of 4. And that's, they were older adults by the time I got divorced. 2, the annulment process, which is wonderful, they should do a mini version of that in the pre-cana program to help people see that before the damage is done.
I think it's a great point, Paul. I'll let Joey respond as well. I think pre-cana is critical. I personally have a problem with the way it's done right now within the church, because you go in for 6 hours and that's it. I think there needs to be even more formation. I think you need to address so many of these critical issues that Paul has brought up as well. Your thoughts though, Joey? I'm sorry, Joey. It's my fault. Let me get you back here. Joe, go right ahead.
Yeah, no, Paul, I love the idea as well about just preparing couples better for marriage. I think that's totally necessary. I'm so sorry to hear about your case. Certainly there are cases like those where there's abuse present. And remaining in that situation, like you said, can be even more damaging to the spouse and the children than perhaps separating. And that's why, you know, the catechism gives the guidance that it does, saying that, you know, if you're in an abusive situation, you should go get to safety. And sometimes that looks like getting a divorce and staying divorced and perhaps even pursuing an annulment. But yeah, you're right that in families where the marriage stays together, things can be so dysfunctional that it's extremely damaging. The point I want to make is that a divorce doesn't magically solve the situation for the kids. It's just another trauma. And sometimes it's a necessary move to make, right? I'm not denying that at all. But it is also an additional difficult thing for the kids to go through. I talk with hundreds of, if not thousands of young people every year who are in these situations. And it's certainly both are difficult, and one doesn't somehow make the other magically better. So I'm sorry for your situation, and kind of my prayers for you and your kids.
Yeah, Paul, thank you. Hey, Joey, what happens to kids from divorced homes when they get married? I mean, we know no fault, the forces come around. A lot of kids are divorced. A lot of people aren't getting married today, in fact. You're seeing more cohabitation. Those numbers are rising. I think it might be a byproduct of this, the trauma of divorce. But for those who, you know, come from divorced homes, when they do decide to tie the knot, what happens? Do they have a propensity to get divorced? And are they largely, I don't know, avoiding getting married in general? How do you see it?
Yeah, well, the research is really interesting on this. Dr. Judith Wallerstein at the University of California, Berkeley, did a bunch of research on this, and she found that children of divorce were less likely to get married, they're more likely to get divorced, they were less likely to have children, and the men, interestingly, were less likely to even enter an intimate relationship, a romantic relationship. And so everything you said rings true, and I think the reason she found, which rings true in my experience personally, coming from a broken family, my parents are divorced, as I mentioned, is that we basically lack a roadmap for love. We've seen a broken model of love and marriage, and so when it's our turn, we feel lost. We feel like we don't know how to go about building a marriage and making it last. And so our fear and our anxiety can prevent us from even getting to that point. Mm-hmm. Or when we are in a marriage, we might struggle extra because we haven't seen it done right. And there's certainly ways to heal that and overcome it, but it does take a lot of extra work, and there's a lot of extra pain and problems that you have to sift through. But there is so much hope. I don't want to leave everyone hanging here. I know couples who've built really beautiful marriages and families who did come from divorced or broken families. So there's so much hope, and that's what my ministry is here to do. We want to help young people to heal and to build virtue so they can go on, break that cycle in their own life, and build strong marriages and holy families.
So, Joey, before I let you go, I know you have your book, and I want to plug that. I want people to check that out. Is there another way to contact you as well? The book, if anyone is curious, it's called It's Not Your Fault, A Practical Guide to Navigating the Pain and Problems of Your Parents' Divorce. What's the best way to connect to you?
Yeah, our website is the best way, and that's restoredministry.com. Again, that's restoredministry, ministry singular.com. I'd say our most valuable resource is our podcast. We have over 50,000 downloads on that. We bring on experts and people to tell their stories about how their parents' divorce affected them and what they did to heal from it. Yeah. And so they're just incredible, incredible interviews on there. The guests are wonderful. In addition to that, we do speaking engagements as well. And so if people would like for us to come to your school, church, or your event, we'd be more than happy to talk on these topics. We give a number of different talks, but one of them is actually on marriage, 7 tips to build a thriving and divorce-proof marriage. It's really practical stuff based on the church's wisdom, time-tested couples, as well as psychological research. I'm like, how do you do this thing called marriage if you didn't see that done right growing up?
That's so true. Well, you're doing a great work. We need you. A lot of dysfunction out there, a lot of pain, a lot of brokenness. So keep up your good work. It's restoredministry.com, the book titled It's Not Your Fault, written by Joey Pontarelli. Joey, we'll catch up again soon. Thanks so much for being here with us today.
Drew, my pleasure. Keep up the great work.
God bless you. All right, I've got to take a short pause. When I come back, we will talk more. Of course, a chaplet is coming up in about 15 minutes, and you are welcome to get in anytime. You know the number, right? It's 888-914-9149. You can get your petitions in to Maggie on our Twitter at Drew Mariani Show as well. She'll bring them to air. And I'll be back right after this short pause. Stay with me.
All the news and issues now that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yo, hey, thanks for joining me. It is a delight. In about 12 minutes, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. So if you have a special need or intention, feel free to give us a call. Of course, you can always email those intentions in. I saw a story I want to tell you about. Goliath, right? It's one of my favorite Old Testament stories, the story of David and Goliath and David facing Goliath. Hey, Maggie, can you talk? Can you open your mic? Or are we in a bad way right now with you on the other side of the mic? We're having some issues here. Maggie and I were just talking during the break. She says she loves the story of David and Goliath. And there's a theory as to how David maybe killed Goliath. There's a report that they know where Goliath is buried. I'll share that coming up. But Share with everyone what you just shared with me. I thought it was kind of an interesting theory.
Well, I had watched a talk by Simon Sinek. He had done a book called Outliers, and he kind of takes a look at David and Goliath. And he did some research into what might have made Goliath the giant that he was. Yep. And there is a medical condition that does, I don't know the technical name of it, but that does make people huge. But typically what happens when they grow that way, they also usually have problems with their eyesight. And so they're blind. And so he's like, you know, sometimes our enemies can look menacing and seem menacing, but we don't know the full story. And David knew exactly what to do and actually hit this guy where he was weakest, right between the eyes.
Yeah, that's so true. That's interesting. And I think you're so accurate when you say sometimes our enemies, evil, often looks towering, looks indomitable, you know, but it's really not. I mean, we can slay evil with our own sling, with our own stones of virtue and faith and love, right? There's a theory, and I'm going to leave it at that. I saw a report a couple weeks ago that Goliath might be buried. They think they know where Goliath's remains might be. And again, I'm just going to qualify this because I don't know how accurate this is. The biblical Goliath that David slew, they think, could be buried where Jesus was crucified on Golgotha. No excavations have been carried out as of yet. The proposed area where they think this might be is actually within the confines of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And Calvary, the hill where Christ hung on a cross, was just outside of Jerusalem. And it is also, believe it or not, the location of David's famous battle with Goliath that ended with David, you know, burying the giant man's severed head. And they also believe that if the area is excavated, archaeologists are going to find Goliath's skull there. So how they'll determine it's Goliath's, I don't know. But researchers are looking for solid proof that the skull is buried at Calvary. No excavations, I said, are done yet. We'll see if it ever does get done. I don't know. But there was one biblical scholar who made the speculation. He said that David took the severed skull to Jerusalem. Odd, because Jerusalem was not David's capital, but a city of God's enemies at the time. And what did he do with the giant's head? The head of the bronze serpent? Well, perhaps he impaled it on a hill outside the city, visible to all. Hundreds of years later, of course, Jesus was crucified at the place of the skull outside of Jerusalem. But why was that place called Golgotha in Jesus' day? Where did the word Golgotha come from? Well, of course, the text doesn't tell us, right? But it's intriguing that this place, the name, it sounds very much like Goliath. Golgotha, Goliath. Whether or not Goliath of Gath is correct etymology of Golgotha, who knows? I don't know. Some people are making that case. But it was in the very city to which the head of Goliath was taken, and it was on the very hill where Jesus' feet were pierced by those nails. But a theory. They also believe that perhaps, you know, there's lots of other theories regarding it. I think the Ark of the Covenant might actually be, you know, housed beneath the beneath Calvary as well. So lots of these different type of theories. Yeah, but it made me think, when you talk about Goliath, I love the story of David and Goliath, because David's a shepherd boy, right? And here's this menacing giant nobody wants to do battle with. And we all have giants in our life, right? We all run into the giants in our life. Maggie was talking about so often they seem more menacing than they really are. You know, it's easy to avoid things in life that maybe you need to deal with, right? Maybe, you know, you're afraid to take that position with a new job because you just don't feel qualified, right? You feel, I can't do this, I'm going to fail. Maybe you fear of failure. Maybe that's your Goliath, right? Maybe you're afraid to pull the trigger and get married. Maybe you feel you're not going to be a good spouse, or maybe you're going to be afraid to be a good parent. I don't know. Instead of confronting your fear, so often you turn and you run from it. Right? Isn't that the case? When we face obstacles, confronting somebody who's living an immoral lifestyle or whatever it might be, when we face those ugly giants, we want to run. Right? As long as you're running away from something, you're going to miss the greatness that God put in you. You can't conquer what you don't confront. Imagine if David ran, right? Imagine if he took off. What would have happened? He would never be the king of Israel, right? Take a look at that story. I think too often we're comforting what we should be confronting. You're making excuses, right? You ignore the issue. You sweep it under the rug. You hope it goes away. When you get honest with yourself, when you confront what you know you need to deal with, it's not easy. It's going to be hard. But I just want to tell you this. God will give you the grace. Maybe the Lord's speaking to you today. Maybe you need to hear this message. God will give you the grace. He'll give you the strength. He'll give you the power to confront what you can't do on your own. If God is on your side, what army can stand against you, right? If God is on your side, all is possible. When David saw Goliath on the battlefield, everything in his mind said, I can't beat this guy. I'm a shepherd. I'm not trained in war. He's too big. I better run. Better get out, man. Just like the army is doing, right? Look at these guys. Who's going to fight Goliath? Nobody wants to fight Goliath. Why should I fight Goliath? What did Scripture tell us? It's in 1 Samuel. Scripture said, David ran quickly to attack Goliath. He knew that he didn't, you know, that if he didn't confront this giant, if he didn't face his fear, he'd miss his destiny. Right? So he ran to him. And, you know, God was with him. And what happened? He felt a strength he never had. He had a confidence, a boldness. He had an ability. He took that sling. And I think that stone was guided by angels' hands, right? He slung that rock and he took down the mighty Goliath. You know, when you run to your giants, you know, God will make things happen. And you might be dealing with this in your family. I really feel that way. Maybe there's somebody you know is not living a right lifestyle. Maybe it's even your spouse you need to talk to, right? Maybe it's a situation at work that needs to be confronted. It's easy to run and stay silent. And believe me, I probably have done it my many times, right? But when you stand up and you speak truth, those are the stones in your sling, all right? Those words of truth will change your destiny. So don't take the easy way out. Don't run from those things that confront you. Confront your fears. Stop running. Face your giants. And I guarantee you, God's going to breathe life into your situation. And the situation won't be as difficult as you think. He's going to go before you, and you're going to take down that giant. You are going to be victorious. So don't worry about that obstacle in front of you. You know, you've got a destiny, and God is on your side. So Goliath had, you know, when David faced Goliath, all he had was a slingshot. I think Scripture tells us he had 5 stones, right? So I think that's it, a bunch of stones against this monster. He said, I don't have a chance, but he knew God was on his side. And those ordinary stones would be exactly what he needed. And sure enough, David defeated Goliath. He made history. From his line came the Savior of the world, right? Jesus Christ. So God's got a mission for you. He created you with a purpose. And I want you to know that. We all have been given missions in life, and sometimes they seem bigger than we are. You know, I think about my own career here, even at the network. My first national show, and I'll tell you the story one day, I was not qualified to get behind a microphone and host a national radio program for the Attorney General of California. What a story that was, right? And yet I faced my giant, and today here I sit with you, right? Here I sit with you. So giants come in all shapes and forms. If God has a destiny and a mission for you, he had one for David. He will certainly help you defeat those giants. He'll help remove those obstacles in your path. He will help raise you up in purpose, and you'll be glad that you said yes to God. I've got to leave it right there because we're up against the clock. We'll pray the chaplet when I return. If you want to join me, here's how you get in. 888-914-9149. And we'll pray for those impossible situations in your life. We'll pray for the courage you need to face that cancer or the financial hardship or the prison sentence or whatever it is that you might be facing. All right? We'll pray together and we'll ask God to come to our assistance. Stay with me.